The other day, I passed by a church with the unlikely name, the Fellowship of Joy. And I thought, so it's come to this. Well, you see, I'm old enough to remember when they named churches for various saints, St. Michael, St. George, St. Mary, or even named churches for places where they were geographically located. I think it's a relatively new development to name a church for an emotion. Well, there is plenty of joy in the Christian life. I know one church that has as its motto the slogan, "The Fellowship of Excitement." And excitement is also a Christian emotion, but looking through the New Testament, you will find that the predominant New Testament emotion is neither joy nor excitement. The emotion that is reported most often in the Gospels is fear. That's right, fear. When people encountered Jesus, the principal emotion they felt was not joy nor excitement. They felt fear. And interestingly enough, the people who felt fear when they encountered Jesus were not those anonymous crowds. The people who were reported as being most afraid of Jesus were his own disciples. When Jesus assists his disciples after a night of fishing failure and they bring in a miraculous catch of fish, they feel fear. When Jesus calms the wind and the waves and saves the disciples in the boat, they feel fear. When the women come to the tomb on that first Easter morning and find that the tomb is empty, they feel fear. Time and again, Jesus has to say to his disciples, "Don't be afraid." Now, he wouldn't have to tell them not to be afraid if they weren't afraid. You would think that we have here come upon an aspect of biblical faith which is not so historically removed, not so remote in time, an aspect of biblical faith to which we could easily relate. For in many ways, we are a people of fear. In many ways, we live in an age of great fear. When one poet attempted to characterize our age, he called it the age of anxiety. 10 years ago, I remember after that first Sunday of September 11th, I stood and I watched people scurrying into church, many of whom I'd never seen before. And if you asked me that day what emotion I saw on their faces, I would have answered fear. It took years for some people to fly again. People were afraid. The doctor comes in after your yearly physical and says, "There's a problem. We need to take some tests. I'm concerned about something on your X-ray." What do you feel? Not a sense of relief or joy, excitement or wonder. You feel fear. And I think the source of fear on those occasions is this: when an alien, unexpected, unwanted reality invades your life, disrupts your reality, alters the accustomed flow of things, there is fear. What will tomorrow bring? What will happen in my life? These are among the fearful questions which arise at such a moment. A friend of mine says he can remember, as a very small child, his mother teaching him to be afraid of the traffic in the street in front of his house. "The street is a dangerous place. You're not even to think about crossing the street without first asking permission. You're not to cross the street unless I'm holding your hand. The street and the cars in it are very dangerous," his mother taught him. But then he grew older. Eventually, he was given permission to venture across the street on his own. He lost his childhood terror of the bad things that might happen to him while crossing to the other side. And the other day, my friend, who's now in his 50s, said, "One thing I found in later life is that my mother was right. Most of the bad things that happen to you in life happen while you're crossing to the other side. A lot of pain in life could be avoided if you only followed that simple rule: don't cross the street unless you're holding somebody else's hand." It's a fearful world out there. And yet that sort of fear is not the fear that Jesus engenders. Fear, New Testament fear, is the fear that comes as a part of the human condition, not as an aspect of living in troubled times, but rather fear in the presence of something, someone greater than you. Fear in the presence of God. Oh, we say we want a vision of God. We claim we want God to speak to us. We say we want some proof of the reality and presence of the living God. But there, on the mountaintop, deep in that mystical cloud, looking into that shining face, quaking at that voice from heaven, they spell fear. We've been told that in recent years, Americans are on a spiritual search. Americans appear eager for mystical spiritual experiences. Well, here on the mountaintop, the disciples are having a mystical spiritual experience, and they are afraid. Why are they afraid? Well, to get to the heart of that question, look at the episode that immediately precedes the visit to the mountaintop. Jesus predicts his death. He straightforwardly tells his disciples what lies ahead. "I will suffer and be killed," he says. When Peter protests that it's impossible to conceive of a Messiah who is rejected, suffers, and dies, Jesus sees him and raises him and says, "And if you want to follow me, you must take up your cross too." Americans are supposed to be on a spiritual journey, a journey toward the divine. Is a journey with a cross a journey anybody had in mind? That's why I would say the fear that is felt so often among Jesus' followers in the New Testament is not just any fear. It is a fear of Jesus. It is not the fear we have when we have some numinous, ethereal, mystical experience. It is the fear that comes when we are face to face with a God whose name is Jesus Christ. When we sense his particular demands upon us, when we see clearly his narrow way to which he beckons us, then we are afraid. The saints have said, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. False gods offer no fear. If that which we call God is only a projection of our own selfish aspirations, then what is there to fear in that? But our God, the God who comes to us in Jesus, is a living God. And to see in a moment that living yet demanding face, to sense that perilous journey, what lies ahead when we follow him, well, that's going to provoke some fear. A while back, a young man met with me. He began the conversation by saying, "Look, you're sort of an expert on God, right? Well, some things have been happening in my life, strange coincidences. I'm going to tell you about them, and I hope I know what you're going to say. I hope you will tell me that this has nothing to do with God, that it's only indigestion. I'm afraid, so here goes." And then he told me a series of odd coincidences, happenstances, weird revelations, realizations. And when he finished, I said to him, "Well, in my expert opinion, that sounds suspiciously like the voice of God. I think God might be intruding into your life and attempting to get you to see things another way, to do something for him." "Oh, no," the young man groaned. "I was afraid you were going to say that." That's what he said, afraid. He was a smart young man, and being an Episcopalian, he didn't know everything about the Bible, but he knew enough. He knew enough that living encounters with this God can be demanding. In my experience, when most people talk about wanting to get spiritual, they mean they want to get warm and cuddly with some amorphous, sweet, always smiling sort of house pet of a God. But encounters with the living God cannot only be deeply moving, but can also be threateningly fearful. On the mountaintop, Jesus doesn't simply reveal himself to his followers. He demands that they follow him. He demands that they walk the same path that he is walking. And so no wonder the disciples fall on the ground, and no wonder Jesus has to say to them, "Get up, do not be afraid." Why are there not more people here in church this morning? You know the standard reasons. People come, they say they can't sing the old hymns. They say they don't need other people to worship God. They say they find church unfriendly. They don't understand that church is more than a country club, more than a mutual admiration society. We're about larger things here. Or they say we speak in strange, outdated language. They say they find the Bible impossible to comprehend. They don't understand that Christian fellowship sometimes takes a long time, a lifetime of training. But today I'd like to suggest, what with Jesus' disciples trembling in fear on the mountaintop, that lots of people avoid church not because they misunderstand what we're about, but because they understand all too well. Church is about God. Church is about the possibility of a threatening, though life-changing, encounter with the risen Christ. Church is about seeing God's way and will in the world, a way different from our way, and having to say yes or no to walking that way. Church is about that. And knowing that scares a lot of people to death. But you are the ones who have been scared to life. Jesus has appeared to you in all of his radiant glory. He has reassured you. He has told you to rise and follow him. And he'll be with you every step of the way, no matter what the journey holds, and you follow. And to you who obey him, he will reveal himself in the travail, in the challenges, and in the suffering that you pass through in his fellowship. And in some inexplicable way, you will experience his life in yours. Amen.